And I think that's important because most teams, most organizations will just, they'll spend, you know, this a season to come up with next year's strategy. And because so much effort is put into it, course correction is painful. Oh my God, remember we did that retreat for 3 days and then we spent 3 months building all those PowerPoint decks and building alignment and getting sign off from this VP and that EVP and that SVP, right? And so there's no way it's changing. And that's that sunk cost is the killer of agility, agility in your strategy, right? Yeah.
Welcome to a new episode of Product Directions Podcast, 100 Product Strategies. We are your insider access to top product leaders shaping the strategy of the most diverse industries today. I'm your host, Nacho Bassino, and I'll be digging into the real-life situations, problems, and frameworks used for a strategy with product people all around the world in all kinds of products and markets. While there is no recipe for success, listening to others' experiences may give you the edge you need to solve your next strategic challenge. Hi, everyone, and welcome to a new episode. Today, I'm really glad because I'm with Chef Gotthelf. Chef, welcome to the podcast.
Nacho, it's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to be chatting with you, and I know that we've gotten to know each other a bit over the last year or so, I think, since Product at Heart, and it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And I assume most people already know you, but just in case, I'm very interested to know what you have been doing lately. Can you give us a brief introduction?
Absolutely. So I'll give you super quick resume, CV. I was a web designer and an information architect and a UX designer for the first part of my career. And then when leading a design team in New York in the mid-2000s, I had to fix the challenge of agile and user experience design. And with the help of my team and Josh Seiden and a lot of other folks involved in that world, we came up with an answer. And that answer was Lean UX. And we wrote a book about it. And since the book came out, I've been working primarily as a consultant, teaching, speaking, training, writing about Lean UX, product discovery, product management, organizational agility. And over the 15 years or so since then, I've written three other books. And right now, Josh Seiden and I are working on our third book together, which is called Who Does What by How Much? And it's a book about objectives and key results. So it's a focus on OKRs, which we believe is a key enabler for great product management, work, teams, and ultimately cross-functional collaboration and great products. So, and that's what I'm working on today, teaching, training, all that kind of stuff.
Perfect. And good question. When is the, do you have already a release date for the book?
Yes, it's going to be April 15th. That's our deadline. And that the interesting thing about you know, fixed time, fixed scope projects, especially if you are self-publishing, which we are, is you can just keep moving the deadline, you know. And we have. I mean, it was supposed to be last year, and then it was supposed to be March, but April 15th is the deadline, and we're going to ship April 15th. So you okay. Heard it here first.
Awesome. Yes. Breaking news. But unsurprisingly, that's exactly what we probably will be talking about today. And just to make my, I usually start by asking about strategy, but just to go away from any fluffy stuff we may cover, I want to make it a bit more concrete. Since you have been working a lot with organizations in implementing OKRs, outcome-oriented roadmaps, my question is, how much of a strategy those companies need to have in order to start working with high quality OKRs?
That's a great question. So there needs to be some, okay? I mean, look, let's back up. You can do OKRs without strategy, right? You can. Like, there's no actual direct requirement that says, if you don't have this, you can't do that. Yeah. You can do it.
And most do, by the way. Most do OKRs without the strategy. So
exactly. And the reality is that you'll get one team, you know, pointing in this direction, another team pointing in this direction, a third in this way, right? So everyone's kind of pulling in different directions without that alignment, but you can do it. Now you need some strategy. Now, the interesting thing is that, as you know, there is infinite content on strategy. And to make the infinite even more infinite, we decided to come up with a definition and a very, very short chapter on strategy in the new book, because it's an inevitable conversation. And we could just say, go read, you know, Richard Rumelt, or go read Roger Martin, or whatever it is, right? So we came up with a definition for strategy, like everything else that we do, that is fairly lean. It's lightweight, and it gets you started, and it gives you a direction, because strategy is a hypothesis, right? And so the way that we've defined strategy is an opinionated approach to addressing an important challenge. That's it, right? So it's important, right? It's opinionated, so you got to have an opinion about what we're doing and why we're doing it. It's an approach. In other words, it's not a plan. It's not features. It's not necessarily tactics. It's a direction for the team. And the strategy should address an important challenge that the team or the organization is going after. I think if you can fill out those three variables, right? What's our opinion? Yeah. What's our approach for solving this particular problem that is important to us right now? Then that's enough strategy to get started, because as you start to work towards key results that define success for achieving that strategy, you're going to learn how wrong or right your initial strategic statement was. And I think that's important, because most teams, most organizations will just, they'll spend, you know, this a season to come up with next year's strategy. And because so much effort is put into it, course correction is painful. Oh my God, remember we did that retreat for 3 days, and then we spent 3 months building all those PowerPoint decks and building alignment and getting sign-off from this VP and that EVP and that SVP, right? And so there's no way it's changing. And that sunk cost is the killer of agility in your strategy. Right. Yeah. So I think if you can come up with a lightweight framework like the one that I just mentioned, or whatever works for you, and then build key results around it, as you work towards achieving those key results, you start to poke holes in that initial hypothesis, strategic hypothesis, and course correction becomes a lot easier because you've invested less in the idea.
Yeah. So, small follow-up question. I'm not sure if this is a spoiler from the book. Do you have an example of some of these kind of three parameters that you mentioned that kind of give a reference?
So here's an opinionated approach to addressing an important challenge. So Josh Seid and I started a book publishing business a few years ago called Sense and Respond Press. And we ran that business for 4 years before officially shutting down the book publishing side of it 18 months, 2 years ago, something like that. We published 20 books. Now, the strategy for Sense and Respond Press, well, our opinion was that people don't like long business books. People don't read long business books, right? But still, the problem that we wanted to address was that executives and leaders and aspiring leaders needed to continuously develop their skills, their awareness, their education, etc. And so our opinionated approach to addressing an important challenge was we were going to publish short, practical business books for busy executives. That was our strategy, right? We were targeting people who were time poor, people who had a stack of business books at home that they never read, but still needed this information in a digestible way. So that was our strategic hypothesis. And we ran with that for 4 years.
Interesting. I imagine myself in the shoes of a product leader, wondering how to decide what is the right challenge to focus on, because it's an opinionated debate or an opinionated selection that we can make. So there are two challenges there. One is there are many challenges that we may tackle. So how to select what is the most important one. And the other one is how to align, because probably there would be tensions between, you know, product leadership, the CFO, marketing. So is there anything in there that you think about when, even when going through the OKRs, how to start aligning all these kind of interests?
So I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you asked, because literally today, so I publish a new blog post every Monday. Today is Monday. I published a blog post this morning called Prioritizing Work with OKRs. Now, you can exchange that word work for strategy, and the article still makes sense, right? We have to realize that, like you said, choosing the most important problem to address right now, in other words, prioritizing, right? Mm-hmm. The most important problem to work on right now is educated guesswork, right? It's our best guess about what's most important right now. And so what elements go into that guess? Well, data, right? So quantitative data, what are people doing today? What do we want them to do in the future? What's getting in their way? What do we know about our customers, right? Experience. Well, in my last job, when we came across this problem, this is what we did, right? And domain expertise, right? I know retail. I've been in retail my whole career, not me, but, you know, role playing, right? And because of that, I know how retail works. And so my expertise tells me that this is most important. All of those elements go into choosing the most important problem right now. Competitive analysis, understanding the market, understanding technological trends, consumer consumption trends, all of those things. But I think the healthiest way to make that decision for an organization is to humbly admit that we are making a guess. It's an educated guess, right? Based on everything we know right now, this is the most important problem. We believe that this is the most important problem right now. And so we're going to go for that. Now, it's important to note, right? And I think a lot of folks get this wrong, is when we choose a direction, particularly in this way, that is, it's a bit of educated guessing, right? It doesn't mean we're never going to work on the other problems. It just means not now, right? It means this is what's important now, and the other stuff we will get to. So we have a backlog of challenges that we can address moving forward. And for example, we may pursue a particular strategic direction, and as we begin to work towards it, maybe it was really easy to achieve. Maybe it was impossible to achieve. Maybe it didn't make, like AI comes out and makes it irrelevant all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. We've got a backlog of problems we can go to and choose new problems from there as well. And so I think that, and look, no one likes to say that they're guessing at work, right? That's why we use the word requirement, right? But a requirement's just a guess. It's a guess said with confidence, you know, right? Or with authority, right? But but the reality is that we are making the best educated guesses that we can. And if we're doing that with the, if we admit that, the benefit of admitting that, right, is it's easier. The perception of course correction is less painful, yeah. Right? Yeah. If I stand up in front of my team, I'm the product leader, and I say, team, we are 100% chasing down this new strategic direction. I know it's the right way to go. The CEO knows it's the right way to go. We're heading down this particular path. And then we find out it's the wrong path. It hurts more to then come back.
Team, the Eagles.
3 months ago, when I stood up here and I was like, yes, we're going down this path. And that didn't work out, right? It's a lot easier if you say, look, I talked to, you know, with the leadership team, and we were debating these three options. And of those three options, based on this data point, this idea, this experience we have, we think this is the strategic direction we should pursue for the next 6 months. It makes it a lot easier to come back and say, hey, you know what? This wasn't exactly right. We're going to go back to one of these other two ideas that we left behind. So but it's humility. It's a quality that most leaders don't show.
Yeah. It's interesting because there are so many side questions to that, but I want to tap the one that first came to mind is the culture shift as well, because we have all these I'm not sure where it's coming from, but leaders need to lead with certainty and need to kind of motivate people by kind of, yes, we need to pursue this path. It's urgent that we do something around this. And having this, not only this humility, but also this way of working inside the organization. Hey, we are still validating hypotheses, and that's the thing we do all day in, day out. That's something that's quite different for how teams operate.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's seen as weakness, right? And it shouldn't be, right? It should be seen as not, I was going to say genius. It's not genius. It should be seen as intelligence. Sorry, that's the word, right? It should be seen as intelligence, right? Because an intelligent person knows and admits that they can't predict the future.
Yeah,
we just can't, right? I mean, remember, like, just think back to here. My favorite example is this. Okay, February 15th, 2020, I was sitting at Camp Nou in Barcelona, watching a Barca game with 100,000 people like this. If you ever been in the old stadium, it's, you know, it was like this, right? Everybody's, because it's, they're tearing it down, they're rebuilding it, right? But we're sitting there like 100,000 people screaming, right? Breathing on everybody, spitting on everybody, right? And literally all of us are like, this is the best, you know, we're having the best time, life is great. And then literally 30 days later, we were in lockdown, right? That's my favorite example. You just can't predict what's going to happen. A year ago, everybody was talking about Web3, right? When's the last time you heard anything about Web3, right? It's all AI at the moment. Right. My point is this, like, an intelligent leader is transparent about the fact that they can't predict the future and that they are making their best educated guess, right?
Yeah.
Leaning on their experience, leaning on their expertise, their leadership. Look, leaders see more than individual contributors, right? And then are willing to change course, right, in the face of new evidence. That's the key.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's very interesting aspect for leaders in what you're saying, in your opinionated definition of strategy, that there is this, I mean, if you read Richard Rammelt or Martin Kagan or whoever, say, hey, you need to find this very important problem and kind of the crux of the issue, what will really make your company stand out and differentiate. And this, to be honest, is a very hard task and can be very intimidating. So if we remove the layer of certainty you need to have and say, hey, make your best hypothesis and start learning and iterating. That's a completely different mindset to be in.
It's a good word, right? So I think, look, language matters. Words matter, right? This is why we get so hung up on the word requirement. Well, it's required. Well, somebody is guessing that it's required. So the word hypothesis works really well in this case, right? Mm-hmm. This is our strategic hypothesis. And the beautiful thing about OKRs is that you can attach success criteria to a hypothesis, right? And those success criteria should be key results. It should be measures of human behavior, right? So if our strategic hypothesis is that we need to write short, practical business books for busy executives, our key results could be things like, at least 2,500 copies sold of every book that we publish, inbound requests from leaders to buy the entire series of books, some quantity of those, right? Yeah. We're looking for those behavior changes in our target audience that tell us that we've chosen the right problem to solve.
Yeah. But when we got into that topic that I wanted to ask about is, how do you recommend people going from this strategy intent? You have a small, kind of very manageable definition of strategy, but then there is a jump to OKRs. I mean, there are so many variables that you can kind of start considering about that strategy. So how do you transition between those two?
You can look at your strategic hypothesis as the high-level objective for the organization. If it's just easier to combine these two things. So rather than saying, we're going to have a strategy for the company, and then we're going to have strategic OKRs, if it simplifies things, I think it's perfectly okay to take your strategic hypothesis, make that your objective, and then assign key results to it as the success criteria, as the definition of done for that strategic hypothesis. Like the example I just gave, right? Yeah. What that then does is then it allows your teams to then say, okay, now I understand what the high level objective is and what the high level behavior change is that we're looking for. And now I can think about how I can improve the world that I have control over to help drive that kind of behavior, right? So let's say I'm the product manager for the authentication team, right? My job is to create the easiest, simplest, smoothest authentication process in our industry. And my key results are, you know, 99% authentication on first try, 90% reduction in call center support calls regarding authentication, stuff like that, right? For us, those are leading indicators for the strategic goals, right? And again, like I say authentication team simply because I want to be super clear, right? Leaders are going to set goals for the organization or for the product line or for the program. And then specific product teams are going to set goals for the world that they control.
Yeah. Right?
And those OKRs become the leading indicators for the organizational goals.
Yeah. One thing that you oversimplified is that you may have many different ways to kind of define these leading indicators, but many different leading indicators that you can choose to optimize for.
Yeah.
So my question goes along the lines of when jumping from kind of this big high level strategic intent or strategic objective, you have all these options that you can pursue. Is there a way or interaction between teams and leadership in order to say, okay, this is, for example, let's go back to the book publishing. You can say, well, we will select five very big names to make super bestsellers, or we may select 500 small names to create small books that will get to this amount of copies we want to sell. So yeah, those type of conversations, how do you recommend structuring those?
So I think realistically, I think the teams need to set their own goals. The teams need to push forward an agenda that says, okay, look, we understand the authentication world. Okay, in authentication, here are our biggest problems. Of those, the ones that drive the strategic goals more effectively, we believe are these two. So we're going to focus on those two behaviors. And we know that we can't reduce call center calls by 100%. Based on previous experience, data, years of analytics, whatever it is, right? And so this is what we believe. And if we do that, that's going to drive, time spent in the system by X percent, and average order value per customer by Y percent. That's what we believe. And so you need to put together a compelling story for your choices, and then you need to meet your managers and say, "Look, boss. Here are the goals that we've selected for our team, right? For our part of the product, our part of the customer journey. Here's why we selected it. Here's how we chose those numbers. And if we hit these numbers, here's the impact that we believe will happen moving forward in the user journey, right? And then your boss can have an objective conversation with you, right?
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense. That doesn't make sense. You know what? This feels a little light. I think you guys can do better. I think this is a little high. Maybe you should lower it. Well, whatever it is, right? But at least you're having an objective conversation about your choices because you were able to tell a compelling story about it. I mean, again, it's such a key part of being a great product manager and a product leader is being to tell good stories about your choices.
Yeah, yeah. And one interesting side effect of that is that or two things, actually. The first one is that the teams who are who have more insights about their own products and what things could what levers they could move are making the decisions of what's the best way to achieve that strategy. And the second one is that if you are creating this culture of bets, at the end of the day, the team is also making a bet. I mean, you can have all the storytelling in the world, you can kind of gather some evidence, but it's, the future is unpredictable, so you are making a bet based on all these factors, pretty much has to do with strategy. I mean, going back to strategy definition, and we say, hey, we are making these opinionated selections or opinionated bets, but since they are opinionated, you may have conflicts in opinions. And of course, the good part is that we have some way to say, okay, these that are not selected are in the backlog, so that's good. But still, there is some argumentation that's going on. So when coming to this definition of strategy that you are giving, that is based on, like, we are making a kind of opinionated guess.
Yeah.
Which is the kind of the shift in powers or the way to align sides of the company that may have conflicting interests?
I mean, look, the reality is we're always fighting the hippo, right? The highest paid person's opinion, right? We're always fighting that. And the best way, the most compelling way that I know to, I'm not going to say win, but to try to convince folks that your direction is the right one is with data and with a compelling story. So it's not, hey, we've chosen, you know, to reduce password reset rates. Okay, why? Well, because we know that when folks forget their password, half of them don't even reset the password and they never come back. Right. So we're losing a lot of customers this way. So we've got to fix that. We've got to make that easy. Okay, why? Well, because if we lose half those customers, reacquiring those customers costs us €17 or $17 per new customer, okay? And you multiply that times 150,000 password reset requests a month, and we're into the millions of dollars. Okay, that's a good story. Right. Is it? I mean, as long as you've done your research, you show up, right? Now, look, your boss may still come back and say, you know what? Yeah, that's about $3 million, right? Like, okay, that's important, but we've got this other issue that's currently costing us $15 million. So I really need you to work on that first. Okay, right? That's a good conversation, right? Where the hippo wins because of objective data rather than I make more money than you.
Yeah. And so the interesting side effect is that you are moving the conversation to why we are doing things. So, hey, you know, I want to do this versus I want to do that. And we're moving it to a more kind of, in a way, to something that you can disagree and move forward instead of kind of fighting the small details.
Yeah.
So one potential side effect of having this opinionated decision is that we are simplifying the cost side of the opinion. So what I'm trying to say is that some opinions, especially in strategic intent, will mean millions of euros or dollars of investment for the company, like, for example, expanding to a new market or something like that. So when facing that, and now we said, okay, we need to make those bets anyway, how do we believe that articulating the right OKRs can help validate that we are making the right investment?
I think that, first of all, you can put cost into key results. Costs are driven by human behavior, right? Uh-huh. And so we can talk about either the implications of human behavior in terms of cost, or if you work at a high enough level to look at cost as a key result at a high enough level, I think, in an organization. I think, again, you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record or that like I have like one advice, but I think cost is part of the story, right? So for example, right, let's come back to our password reset example, okay? You say, boss, look, we're losing 150,000 customers a month, reacquiring those because of password resets and requests, and reacquiring those folks is $17. That's millions of dollars every month. Now look, to get those folks to not do password resets, we have three options. Option A costs us X dollars, option B costs Y dollars, option C costs Z dollars, right? And each one of those comes with a higher level of fidelity, of delight, of user experience, of smoothness or whatever it is. And I think that that's valuable to come back with estimations that say, look, this is an expensive option for us to do this. We don't know how to do it. So we've got to go learn how to do it and try it out and implement it and then scale it up. But if we get it right, this takes care of everything forever. Versus here's a quick fix. This will get us halfway there. It's not really scalable, but it'll get us through the rest of the year if we've got more important things to deal with. And I think that that's part of your story, is to come back. And it's not just to say, look, here are the problems, right? But as a product leader or product manager, you're saying, look, here are some options that we've considered, and here are the costs associated, estimated costs, right? Because again, we can't predict the future. The estimated costs that we assume will make sense here. And our recommendation is option B. Or whatever, but you let us know.
Yeah, and the interesting side effect of that is that you are asking for decision, and you are helping them make more intelligent decisions. Hopefully,
you're so making it super easy, right? I mean, think about it, right? Think about how imagine you're the boss, right?
Yeah, and that's exactly what I want.
Right, exactly. I mean, literally, I'm coming to you on with a tray with three very clear options based, in fact, that solve a very real problem. I mean, to me. That's a good day at the office.
I want to ask a more intelligent version of that question, because here's what I'm trying to uncover. As a leader, you make this guess about the future. That's your strategy. Yeah. And you're saying, hey, we are committing to going here, and we are having this. I mean, you work with large corporations, so you may know that this can be a very huge investment for a leader making this bet. And if they're wrong, then their head is on the line. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say is, how can you control the amount of investment you make in that direction to gain some feedback? So it's going back to your kind of sense and respond model of sorts, saying, hey, we want to invest, instead of investing 1 million to know if we are wrong, how can we invest 10K to do some experiments and to gain some feedback from the market? So I'm not sure if this goes too much into discovery, but kind of strategy to OKRs to that, how will you phrase it?
Right. It's the next step, right? And so I think this is where you know, I think enlightened leadership or enlightened leaders really shine. So I'll tell you a story to answer this question. Years ago, we were doing some executive coaching and product management and Lean UX training at one of the big US banks. So we were working at all levels of the organization, from the C-suite down to the individual product teams working. And there was this executive working there, and she was smart. She knew this stuff forwards and backwards. She understood that, you know, we're guessing and we need to experiment and learn. There was a back-end system at the bank that was used to rehabilitate people who had defaulted on their credit cards. It was a really important system. It generated a lot of money, and it was old. And so the product team and the tech team that was in charge of that system wanted to update it to put it on a new tech stack. And what they needed to do was what they called a lift and shift. So they were going to lift it off the old tech stack and then shift it onto a new tech stack. Okay. And they came to this executive and they said, this is the system. This is what it does. This is the kind of revenue it generates. Here's what we want to do to fix it. It's going to cost $20 million and take 2 years to build. Okay. It's a bank that makes billions of dollars.
Right.
Sure. And she said, that's awesome. Okay. I'm going to give you 6 months and $5 million. Okay. Show me value at the end of that, and I'll give you another 6 months and another $5 million. And you know, she didn't say you can't have $20 million in 2 years. She said, I want you to think about this project differently, right? Instead of setting down a path for 2 years where a million things can go wrong, I want you to focus on a quarter of that distance. I'll fund it for a quarter of that distance, but I want you to generate value. Right. So instead of it's that minimum viable product approach to it. Right. What's a slice of functionality that we can deliver in a shorter time frame and start giving value back to the customers and then to the bank? And as long as that's going well, right, we can then add another slice of value and then another and another, and we'll be done. And I think that's how you have to think about it as a leader, right? The team is going to come and say, here are your three options. And the three options cost 1 million, 5 million, 10 million. and you say, okay, great. I like the 10 million option. That makes sense. I'll give you, you know, 2.5 million this quarter, right? Show me value.
Yeah.
Show me value. I'll give you another 2.5. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting part is that, I mean, OKRs are there to do exactly that. I mean, at the end of the day, they will help you set more short-term goals, kind of short-term feedback loops that you can, I mean, since we usually have fixed costs in terms of the team working in this thing, the OKRs, it's a good tool. Maybe a follow-up question to that, and this is too hypothetical, I know. Why do you think this is the exception and we need to find this enlightened story and not the norm? Because we have the tools and this is the logical way to think about it. Why isn't this not happening more?
There's lots of reasons for this. I mean, we can start with finance. Okay. Finance wants fixed budgets and explicit ROI targets. I'll give you a million, you're giving me back 10. Right. Never mind that we never hit those numbers ever. Right? We have decades of historical evidence that says we never get this right. Doesn't matter. I give you a million, you give me back 10. Right? That's number one. And so there's this whole financial plan, like planning season where we have to commit to projects and budgets and ROI targets. And that's number one. Number two, there's a leadership challenge here that is, one, it's about perception. Right? The perception that I have the answer. I'm the boss, right? I'm the highest paid person. I need to have I need to know how to do this, right? So there's no humility, there's no wavering in my ideas because I'm the boss. So I'm not going to show any quote unquote humility or weakness. I'm just going to give everybody the direction that we're going. There's the perception that that's how it needs to be. That's the second issue, the big issue. The third issue is there is a real risk. There's a real kind of fear in middle managers, right? So you're not the boss, but you're managing in the middle, that the boss is going to come to you and say, what's the team working on, right? And it's a lot easier to say, well, the roadmap shows that they're working on feature A, and then they're going to do feature B, and then next week they're starting feature C, rather than, I don't know, right? We're running some experiments this week with this idea and this idea. I don't know exactly where it's going to land, right? That's not, I mean, it's an honest answer, but it's not people are afraid to give that answer. And there's at least one more reason why this doesn't happen. There's a lot, but there's at least one more big one. And the last one is performance management criteria and incentives for the individual contributors. So what are we rewarding? What are we paying people to do? And how are we measuring them as individuals? Right. Yeah. If the measure of success for me is I delivered a feature, I'm going to optimize my work for delivering that feature. Is it a good feature? Is it a bad feature? Is it necessary? Unnecessary? Irrelevant. I get paid to deliver features. If I get paid to deliver key results, I work different, right? Because sometimes it's delivering a feature. Sometimes it's solving the problem a different way, launching a service, killing an idea, pivoting, whatever it is, right? And, and that's a huge difference. Most companies reward delivery.
Yeah, and again, goes back to the finance model and the certainty and whatnot. And also, even for teams, many times it's hard to switch to this accountability for outcomes because you need to embrace uncertainty. So there's a risk there. I want to tie the conversation to something that we really didn't really cover, which is the outcome-based roadmaps. So you can, one of your greatest animated slides is this fog of war in the roadmap that moves as time goes by. So I think there is some logic to what we have been discussing about strategy and then moving from strategy to OKRs. Do you see this as a kind of the same thing as backlog of outcomes, or when jumping from strategy to OKRs, there is some tools or some suggestions you do for sequencing those potential outcomes you might achieve?
So look, I actually think that user story mapping is a great way to think about the sequence for OKRs, right? So you're kind of mapping out the customer journey, you're identifying various ways that you can solve for those desired tasks, right? There's different levels of effort. Mm-hmm. And then you're planning release strategies. And you can say, look, I think in Q1 and Q2, these are our release strategies and they're targeting these behaviors. And then in Q3 and Q4, right, we're going to talk about doing something else, and it's going to target, you know, this part of the user experience or the user journey, and it's going to target these behaviors. So I think you can use tools like user story mapping to drive that. Again, anytime that you're looking out into the future, into any kind of meaningful future, let's just say more than 6 months, to be generous. Okay. There is an increasing level of uncertainty. So we're going to make commitments, but we're also going to check in on a quarterly basis to say, well, does this still make sense? Right. And the last component here is psychological safety, right? I have to feel comfortable talking with my peers and my colleagues and my bosses and my leaders to say, you know, that plan we made 6 months ago, well, the next 6 months doesn't make sense anymore. Right. And I want to feel safe saying that. I don't want to get penalized for saying that. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get fired or demoted, right? So that to me is crucial. We have to allow people to raise their hand and say, this doesn't make sense anymore now that we're here in time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was going back to the leadership culture steps. Seems like we are delivering bad news. So team delivering bad news to the middle manager delivering news to higher manager, then to the board. So it feels like everyone wants to prevent that, which at the end of the day is what we really want to change, to shift gears when we need to. Okay. So maybe one of the closing questions I usually do is, what is some learning about strategy that you have along your career or along helping the many teams you had that we didn't really cover in what we have spoken so far?
Well, I mean, look, I'll say this, and it kind of echoes back to what you said right at the beginning. So many organizations I work with either don't have a strategy or the teams have no idea what the strategy is. It's crucial not only to have something, but to have something that everybody knows. And I would urge leaders to make sure that their teams know what the strategy is and to articulate it as quickly as possible and as lightweight way as possible with some kind of a lightweight template like the one I shared earlier, right? Rather than spending months and months and months of work, spend a week together. Spend whatever it is coming, like filling this out, looking at data, talking to customers and making some decisions, because inevitably some of that is going to be wrong. And so the sooner that you can find out what's wrong and what's right, the sooner you can course correct. And that is true organizational agility. So it's not that we want to do crappy strategy work, right?
Yeah.
But we want to do just enough strategy work to get us moving, so that we can continue to update it and improve the strategy.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because let me play back that to you, but you were saying making the strategy in 1 week, that's the easy part. The hard part is all the cultural change, I would say, because if I believe that I'm making millions in investment by defining this strategy and there is no way to change it, what is defined for the next 12 months, then I won't spend a week. I won't spend 2 months and I want to go into every detail. If we shift gears and we understand that we will use this as a bet to sense and then respond, then it becomes much easier, but that's a cultural change that I assume it's much harder.
Yeah. Yeah. It's significantly harder. Yeah. It's a huge cultural change, a mindset shift.
Yeah. All right, Chef, this has been wonderful. A lot of insight. Thank you so much. Where can people find you and what can they do for you?
Easy to find at jeffgotthealth.com and LinkedIn. You can feel free to connect with me there and as well as sign up for my newsletter on my website. I'd be grateful for that. We also have the OKR book, Who Does What by How Much, coming out in April. And so we have a website at okr-book.com. which will allow you to sign up for the wait list, and we'll just let you know when the book's coming. So hopefully you'll buy it, tell your friends, and write us a very positive review. That would be really nice.
That sounds great. All right, Jeff, thanks so much for sharing with me today, and have a nice rest of the day.
My pleasure, Nacho. It's been great. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of 100 Product Strategies, the podcast by Product Direction. You can also follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, or Instagram to get access to free weekly content that helps product people upgrade their skills and become more successful. You can access more material, promotional trainings, and be notified of every episode of the show with Product Direction's weekly newsletter. Join thousands of product leaders by registering in productdirection.co.